for the Division of Juvenile Justice, we consider it definitely our top priority right now.
A juvenile detention center in Southeast in bad need of a renovation. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 15th of December. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska's only U.S. House member speaks his mind on the Copenhagen conference.
It's a show by the Greenies, and it is an Al Gore program that's trying to convince all the world that the world's coming to an end.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by AlaskaDispatch.com, reporting from across the state using multimedia and citizen journalism online to tell the story of our state. Find your Alaskan news at AlaskaDispatch.com. Pin Air, with 50 years of flying experience and offering charter service throughout Alaska and the United States. Details online at pinair.com. And by GrantStation, your fast track to funding on the web at grantstation.com, serving Alaskan organizations for over 10 years.
Urging lawmakers to put an end to what he calls a civil war within state government, outgoing gas pipeline coordinator Harry Noah today called on lawmakers and the executive branch to make decisions on the future of Alaska's energy. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
In his final report to the House Resources Committee, Harry Noah brought legislators up to date on the interlocking phases of the work he's been doing since his appointment in March. He said his goal in the job was not to build a project, but to sort out the options from which the state's political leaders could choose. In addition, he bluntly told the members that the lack of decisions on a wide range of projects was the reason for his departure. Noah showed the committee a graphic with a depiction of a major North Slope energy sale at the center. It was surrounded by 8 small boxes labeled with various plans to use the gas, such as the TransCanada project, the Denali gas line, Cook Inlet gas producers, and a bullet line from the slope.
There's all kinds of energy in these individual boxes, but we're not actually moving forward. I mean, there isn't a major sale off the North Slope. We don't have a gas supply, and you know, until we get ourselves together, we're just thrashing ourselves at this point in time. And quite honestly, the legislature's funding most of this. I mean, you're paying for most of this.
He said that while there are good people doing good work, what he is seeing in state government is not positive. Noah says he's as guilty as people working in other projects that would put North Slope gas to use. There are conflicts that need to be resolved. At the top of that list, he pointed to fiscal stability issues that potential gas producers want settled.
That's the underlying question here. It's political dynamite right now, obviously. I mean, it's very hard to deal with. But if you don't deal with it, what's going to happen is there's going to be an open season. It's going to be heavily conditioned. And we'll just keep rolling. We'll just keep rolling. It'll be another year after that. And if there's a new governor, there'll be new people, you know, we'll just keep rolling and rolling and rolling here.
The big conflict he sees is the importance that's being placed on renewable energy projects. He has no argument with the idea, but he says the state is confusing the market by calling for private sector development of that industry.
It's very unusual for a state to have so much money that it's got disposable income to spend on these types of things. And we are distorting this marketplace that on one hand we want people to commercially come in and do things, but on the other hand we've got this hammer out here that says, you guys go ahead and spend your money, but if you do, we may decide to come and do it ourselves. It's confusing the marketplace. And so you, the politicians, need to make some decisions. Are you going to fund these alternative projects?
Legislators in attendance agreed with Noah's assessment. Matsu Senator Charlie Huggins said Noah is a casualty of the civil war he described. Noah told the committee that he resigned after coming to the conclusion that politicians need to make some decisions. He said they have plenty of people providing input, but he didn't see anything coming the other way. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Commissioner of Natural Resources Tom Irwin addressed some of the same issues as Harry Noah in the afternoon session of the committee meeting. Irwin defended the AGEA project and TransCanada and Exxon's role in the design of the pipeline. He disagreed with Noah on the need for legislators and the administration to make decisions quickly on several issues. Irwin said more information is needed before those decisions are made, and a single decision will not cover every need in the state. He says there are people studying the various options that are appropriate for Alaskans.
Harry's groups focus on bullet line. We're predominantly a GIA. You have the energy group working on energy for the villages. But if you make a decision today, you're lacking the information from all the design on a GIA. You're lacking the bullet line information. And I propose you need to make decisions, but you need to do it with more information.
Irwin asked lawmakers not to get sidetracked with any single option before them. A coalition of environmental groups and Arctic communities has filed a second lawsuit aimed at blocking a Shell Oil subsidiary from drilling in the Beaufort Sea. The group sued Tuesday, hours after the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission filed a similar lawsuit. Both suits aim to block plans by Shell to drill two wells off Alaska's north coast. Attorneys for Earth Justice filed the second lawsuit with the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. They say the Minerals Management Service improperly approved Shell's drilling plan and did not properly evaluate effects of proposed drilling, including the risk of a major spill. In response, a spokesman for Shell Alaska said MMS was thorough in its evaluation. Once again, a major renovation for a Southeast Juvenile Detention Center is a top priority in the governor's capital budget. But the long-sought Johnson Youth Center project has been there before and never made it out of the legislative process. This year, the recent escape of two youths from the Juno facility has given the project some urgency. Rosemary Alexander from member station KTOO has more.
If the renovation had been done, those two kids couldn't have escaped.
Juno Senator Dennis Egan has seen the 40-year-old building, the outdated security systems, and the 30-year-old fence that allowed the November 27th break to occur. So has State Juvenile Justice Director Steve McComb.
For the Division of Juvenile Justice, we consider it definitely our top priority right now.
The $9.8 million project would remodel the existing facility to current security standards. McComb says the main building was originally a women's prison. It's got a big kitchen, good-sized gymnasium, and in some places, staff members can't see the youth they're supposed to monitor unless they're in the same room.
The way that it's currently designed, there's a lot of blind spots, which you can't see from the staff station.
The admissions area and treatment center is the latest addition to JYC, built in the late 1990s when Egan was Juno mayor. McComb says little has been done since.
There would be a better nursing office. A medical suite would be improved. The classrooms for the youth to study will be improved. Just an overall system improvement.
The 8-bed center admits about 400 youth a year for short-term detention. They range in age from 13 to 18, and most come from Southeast Alaska. The individual rooms are often overcrowded, and that worries Egan.
They've had times when there have been 20 kids in this facility, and they just throw mattresses on the floor, and that's their home. These folks out there are really connected to these kids that are there, but they make do. But it's not conducive to turning these kids around in spite of, the great work that those people do.
Additional beds are not part of the upgrade, according to McComb, because that would mean a staff increase and greater annual operating budget.
We've already implemented this year a program modeled after one they have in Anchorage, a community detention program, which we can work with kids, the low-level risk kids, out in the community more.
But McComb says the renovation would make a major difference to the staff and youth lodged at Johnson Youth Center. Superintendent Dennis Weston says the renovation would fix the escape route.
The area they jumped across was quite high. I mean, we figured it was a 12-foot wall and then a 6-foot fence. So that's 18 feet up, and they're jumping from one area to another. And, our big concern on things like that is that, someone falls and is seriously injured. We were hoping for a renovation that allows us to do a little better programming with the kids and build a little better relationships and just put kids in a position to make better decisions in general. And it kind of comes with that we'll get improved security as well.
Meanwhile, the youth who scaled the fence have since been captured and returned to the facility. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the state works to clean up big game guiding.
I've been met with nothing but complacency and apathy towards enforcing their own rules about using the land commercially.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. What would you do with an extra $56 a week? Well, that's how much you're spending if you smoke one pack of cigarettes a day. At $8 a pack, that's $240 a month, $3,000 a year. Think about it, and think about quitting. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line can help. A trained quit coach is waiting for your call. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, 1-888-842-7848. It's free, and it works. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line.
Senator Lisa Murkowski is again trying to limit the Environmental Protection Agency's power to regulate greenhouse gases. Last week, the EPA issued findings that carbon dioxide, methane, and other greenhouse gases endanger public health. That determination allows the agency to move toward regulating emissions from coal-fired power plants. But Murkowski says it should be up to Congress, not a federal agency, to craft regulations. In a Senate floor speech yesterday, the Alaska Republican blasted the EPA's move.
Now, this finding is supposedly rooted in concerns about the public health and the public welfare. But what it really endangers are jobs, economic recovery, and American competitiveness.
Murkowski plans to file a disapproval resolution, which is a seldom used move that prohibits rules written by an executive branch agency like the EPA from taking effect. Her resolution will go to the Senate's Environment and Public Works Committee, which has 20 days to take action. Alaska Congressman Don Young says the United Nations Climate Change Conference going on in Copenhagen is nothing more than hype and won't accomplish anything.
It's a show. This is really a political movement, and it's a show by the Greenies, and it is an Al Gore program that's trying to convince all the world that the world's coming to an end. And, they fly in with their big jets, and they have their limousines and their hotels. The footprint this one convention is making is probably as large as 10 of the largest cities in the world.
The Republican congressman says he believes the richer nations at the conference will try to stifle energy development in the countries that need it most. Young doesn't expect a productive international agreement to come out of this month's meetings.
When they get done, what will they have accomplished? They may set some so-called goals, but there will be no binding agreement.
Some of Young's colleagues in the House are planning to go to Copenhagen this week, led by Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. President Obama will also attend. The state is trying to clean up the big game guiding industry in Alaska. The Department of Natural Resources has proposed a program that would limit the number of guides allowed to work on state-managed lands. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Things are not well in the big game guiding business in Alaska. Hundreds of guides, both licensed and unlicensed, operate pretty much unregulated on about 100 million acres of land under state jurisdiction. The DNR's Clark Cox says the proposed program out for public comment right now is aimed at fixing major problems in the industry.
Too many guides work in the same areas, overcrowding, competition for the game, lack of resources.
The situation has developed since 1988 when the Supreme Court struck down a state system that used to grant a limited number of guides exclusive geographic areas to work. The court found it unconstitutional in what's known as the Osaichik decision. Cox says it essentially opened up big game guiding to anyone.
It's kind of been get your guide license and come get a permit from one of the landowners and head out there and do your guiding. And there's kind of no limits. And so folks can just kind of go wherever they wanted. And in a lot of guide use areas, there's 20, 30, 40 people registered to work those areas annually. So it just puts a lot of pressure on small areas.
The number of state-licensed guides has swelled to over 600. The state has made the test for becoming a guide tougher, but guides still operate wherever they want. Cox says the DNR's proposed system would create concession areas and limit the number of guides who can work them. He says the state has taken into account problems with the old system struck down by the court in developing the new one.
We've looked at those, and I think we've got those pretty well addressed with the new program being very competitive, making sure that the state receives a fair return for the program paid for by the industry. There is a set term for these concession contracts, and they're not going to be renewable or transferable or saleable.
Cox says an application fee, a bid system for coveted guiding areas, and a per-client charge will pay for the system. The DNR used successful guide regulations implemented by federal agencies as models for the proposed system. They're taking input from the state's Big Game Commercial Services Board, individual guides, and trade organizations like the Alaska Professional Hunting Association. APHA Director Bob Fifth and says the new system is needed, but it will change the guiding business in Alaska.
This may reduce a number of guides that are operating on state lands, but our wildlife resources and our social atmosphere and our industry stewardship, the consumer protection aspects are all calling for a reduction in that level of effort. And as Alaskans, we have to respect all those things.
Fithian says his organization's goal is to ensure the guiding industry is sustainable, and the system being developed by the DNR will do that. One key issue being debated is what criteria to use to select guides to work a limited number of state hunting areas. Fithian says the selection criteria should emphasize proper values and ethics.
The person's consideration for wildlife conservation and land and water conservation in the area that he's operating in, so that a person who's been actively trying to do a good job or a new person that has a vision of doing a good job would have a good chance of receiving these areas.
Longtime Healy-based guide Coke Wallace says many in the industry are far from ethical. He cites a recent past case where a guide poisoned wolves and many others where guides have ripped off clients.
There are guys in my industry that specialize on never intending to take you on a hunt. They take your money. The day comes and goes when you're supposed to meet them at the Fairbanks International Airport or whatever, and they just don't show up.
Wallace is glad there's movement to clean things up, but he doesn't believe the DNR can follow through. He says the agency has been ineffective in clamping down on illegal and unethical guide operations since it took over management 20 years ago.
The 17 years I've been dealing with them, I've been met with nothing but complacency and apathy towards enforcing their own rules about using the land commercially.
Wallace wants the state to fight the Supreme Court ruling that struck down the old exclusive guide area program and the state's Big Game Commercial Services Board re-empowered to monitor guides. He also thinks there should be a 10-year moratorium on the licensing of new guides to thin out their ranks. The DNR is taking public comment on its proposed system for revamping big game guiding through January 21st. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Tech Alaska, operators of the Red Dog Mine in Northwest Alaska, delivering jobs and revenues to Alaska for 20 years and now working on the next 20 years. Online at reddogalaska.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Attention hunters, you must apply now for all drawing hunts and for all Tier 1 and Tier 2 hunts in 2010 and in 2011. There's no application period in the spring of 2010. Applications must be postmarked by December 15th, so get your application in the mail now. Or you can apply online until December 31st. Information online at wildlife.alaska.gov or 1-907-267-2257. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
A new group has formed to promote cruise ship tourism within Alaska. The organization wants to convince the public that the industry is an important part of the statewide economy, but its main focus is to change taxes and environmental regulations on the big ships. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has the story.
Last summer, Steve Heitz gave a call to arms against the cruise ship head tax during a tourism summit in Juneau.
The tax is a bone stuck in our throat, and it's choking us. This requires courage on the part of our state legislature, the kind of courage that will not win friends from the special interest groups that sold the citizens of Alaska a bill of goods with the cruise ship initiative.
The Skagway Streetcar Company owner was among those railing against the passenger fee and other provisions of the initiative, which was passed by voters in 2006. Similar appeals were made at two more summits, one in Anchorage, the other in Fairbanks. Speakers at all three meetings called for a new statewide organization to represent tour business interests. That's now happened. John Litton is owner of Sitka Tours and spokesman for the newly formed Alaska Alliance for Cruise Travel.
Everybody's fearful that we may not be in business here in another year or two if the trend of the ships repositioned to other countries and other states continues.
Alaska Act, as it's called, has several goals. It wants to let cruise lines know they have support within the state. It hopes to improve public perceptions of an industry that delivers customers to members' tours and shops, and it plans to lobby for changes to the head tax and some of the environmental regulations governing the ships.
There are a number of provisions in the initiative that we would like to see the legislature address, and it's not our intent that these things go away. We believe that there is some sort of a happy medium. There should be some ability to make a compromise that they can at least attain and everybody live with.
The Alliance for Cruise Travel is an outgrowth of an effort by the Resource Development Council and other groups. Litton says his organization is funded by about a dozen Alaska tour businesses and is not getting any money from the cruise lines. Juneau attorney Joe Geldof wrote the Cruise Ship Initiative and has been part of negotiations over several of its provisions. He says the new group won't make much of a difference.
At the end of the day, just like we did with the pollution changes last year with the consumer protection, where there was, you know, consideration and some changes, there's one or two adults in the industry that sit down with two or three adults in the legislature, and we work out these problems. We've done that four times successfully, and a new player is not going to add anything to the mix except confusion and hysteria.
The legislature has been reluctant to make major changes to a ballot measure approved by the voters. Sitka lawmaker Bert Stedman, who co-chairs the Budget Writing Senate Finance Committee, says interest may be growing.
There were several of us at the end of last session that were talking about the impact that the industry is facing. But at that time, it didn't appear that there'd be much attention given to the industry and the issue out of the rail belt in this next legislative session. But then over the summer, with the challenges that Anchorage has had in their budget and their impact in this issue, I think, you know, that may surface.
He says any major changes, such as reducing the head tax, would need the governor's support. So far, the Parnell administration has said it will defend the fee, which the industry is challenging in court. I'm Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
This evening is the fourth night of Hanukkah, the Jewish Festival of Lights. It's an observance that is thousands of years old, but as KSKA's Len Anderson reports, here in Anchorage, the Hanukkah celebration is marking a local first.
It's Wednesday evening, December 9th, and 2 days before the first candle of Hanukkah is lit. A half dozen singers with a guitar start practicing Hanukkah songs at Temple Beth Shalom in Anchorage. They're rehearsing for a special Hanukkah celebration at Providence Alaska Medical Center Chapel. It takes place tomorrow afternoon, with the one-hour observance beginning at 4:30. Malka Osserman, a Jewish chaplain resident in Providence's Clinical Pastoral Education Program, organized the celebration.
I just have this exuberance about my own tradition that I wanted to share with the Christian community. And I talked on my night shifts to people at emergency rooms and the different floors. And everybody was very, very excited about it. People came to me and told me that they've never had a Hanukkah party and it's very, very special for them. So I decided that I'm going to do it.
It's a historical celebration of a military victory, is what it was about 2,300 years ago.
Rabbi Michael Oblath of Temple Beth Shalom will perform the menorah lighting and Hanukkah blessing tomorrow. He explains Hanukkah celebrates the driving out of the Assyrian Greeks from Israel and the restoration of the temple.
Put the statue of Zeus that had been set up inside the temple in Jerusalem, threw it out, cleaned the temple, and then rededicated it, and they celebrated for 8 days.
The military history is described in the two books of the Maccabees. Rabbi Oblath says the subsequent Roman occupation of Israel added another identifying feature of Hanukkah.
There was a later legend that grew up under the Romans that there was this little cruse of oil that was found that was supposed to burn for one day and it burned miraculously for 8 days. And it was really something symbolic of how the Jewish community under Rome could even handle the idea that previous Jewish community a couple hundred years before had actually been able to overthrow a military power.
Reverend Frank Macht oversees the spiritual care department as well as the chaplain pastoral education program in which Osserman is participating. Reverend Macht, an evangelical Lutheran minister, believes, like the others, tomorrow will be the first Hanukkah celebration at Providence, a Catholic hospital.
This could be the beginning of looking at interfaith celebration calendars throughout the year and see if we have resources even right here in the hospital or in the community to address those needs. Certainly celebration at a time of dealing with crisis and being mindful of God's presence in whatever form may be very helpful and help also our staff that often deal with difficult times and a lot of stresses to come together even for a short period of time of celebrating.
Rabbi Oblath says, although wrapped within Jewish history, the Hanukkah observance holds a quality that crosses religious lines.
Freedom itself and the ability to express yourself and your beliefs without fear of persecution. And so the tradition of Hanukkah is to put your Hanukkiah in the window so people can see it. And so having parties and celebrating, like going to Providence on the 16th, is a wonderful opportunity to do that. It gives a chance to outreach to the community and to the people that are there and the staff that are there for one particular afternoon and just have some fun.
Let's have a party, we'll order Sephora, around the table, we'll give you...
Once again, the Providence, Alaska Medical Center Hanukkah celebration takes place tomorrow afternoon. Everyone is welcome. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Rosemary Alexander and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Len Anderson in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. And by Alaska Communication Systems, converging voice, video, internet, and data applications for business. ACS connects companies from the North Slope to Ketchikan to each other and the rest of the world. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.